Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and once again, we are talking about how recruiting works, this time with Notre Dame head coach Kevin Corgan. KC, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you had a delightful summer and are looking forward to September 1st, as well as the return of your team to campus. How are you doing?
Good, good. We actually start classes tomorrow, so everybody's gotten back over the weekend here, and here we go again.
No doubt. And certainly a lot to discuss in the realm of Notre Dame lacrosse as you come off of two NCAA championships. And I think we'll touch on a little bit of that as we get toward the end of this conversation. But this is part of a series, and I try to make each conversation relatively particular to the counterparty, specifically with how they go about their role in recruiting, their approach to recruiting, and you know, what some of the circumstances have meant specifically as your career has evolved. And so those are the two primary topics that I want to isolate, you know, in talking about your approach, Notre Dame's approach, and this conversation, the combination of what you value relatively to your peers that might be a little unique, and then how it's changed over the course of time. So to begin, I do want to kind of set the table with a few general questions. My favorite is, do you enjoy recruiting?
You know, I don't mind recruiting. I really don't. I think I love the certain aspects of recruiting. I love the you know, the getting a chance to meet new people, new families, new lacrosse enthusiasts, if you will. You know, is always great. You know, reconnecting with a lot of people that you know through the lacrosse world, the high school coaches, the club coaches, and different people. I enjoy that. The talking about Notre Dame, the actual, if you will, selling of Notre Dame to new families every year. I enjoy that. I mean, I enjoy sharing what our program's about, what our school's about, and trying to find the people that really, really want to be here and are you know, as infatuated with this place as I am. You know, listen, if the hard part is sitting in a lawn chair watching lacrosse all summer, I think people have it a lot worse than me. I think they start bringing a little inflatable kiddie pool next to me to, you know,
put my feet in
or whatever.
No, I appreciate you saying that because I've done a lot of complaining about that on the last couple podcasts, and you're right. If that is the worst thing about the gig, then there are a lot of things that could be worse. But before moving off of that, I do want to just kind of follow up with one more, which is, how do you describe yourself as an evaluator? You and I have spent a lot of time talking about how you approach coaching, but what about evaluating and trying to decide whether or not you like a player's game?
Yeah, you know, that's very particular to each person. And one of the things that when you get new staff or new staff members or whatever, you have to kind of synchronize everybody, you know, and calibrate what you're looking at so that you understand what each person tends to like or whatever, so that you can use that in the calculus of who you figure out you're going to take at the end or go after the hardest at the end or whatever. But, you know, myself, I'm a sucker for guys who really know the game and love the game, right? Those guys that just play their fanny off and they really understand what's going on around them, you know? And it's funny, I then have to kind of go back and go, okay, all right, realistically, that kid, he's never going to be big and strong enough to play at our level, but man, I love his game, right? I just that kid just knows how to play and plays with a relentlessness and a ferocity that I love. And so, I mean, there's that. And then, but then you have to, you know, what kids have to be able to do at this level. And so there's a size and strength and athleticism but you know, all those things come in varying degrees, right? The smarter a kid is, he can afford to be just a little bit slower. The faster a kid is, he can afford to be just a little bit, you know, smaller, you know, so you weigh each of these things. And then at the end of the day, there is no kind of perfect recruit that has all these things in spades. And so you kind of got to go with what you happen to have a particular affinity for. And for me, that's IQ and a heart for the game and somebody who just plays really, really hard.
So to drill in on one of the things you mentioned a minute ago about having the opportunity to talk about Notre Dame, certainly Notre Dame sits in a relatively unique spot relative to the rest of the sport insofar as a combination of geography, the identity of the institution, and the history of the institution. When you talk to someone who might otherwise be a little bit less familiar, right, didn't have, you know, a grandparent or an older child who went to Notre Dame and really doesn't know much more than maybe Rudy and Sunday football games, where do you start?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is it's a place that lives and counts on its values every day. I mean, the messaging at this place, I've been here 36 years. The messaging is amazingly consistent, because it's built on kind of these timeless values that aren't changing year to year. That you know are still the same in a good year and a bad year. That are still the same, you know, when you're in the Big East or you're in the ACC or things like that. And those are the things that you know about the institution in particular. That I think we've tried to, as much as possible, represent in our program and mirror in our program, because you know then we feel like we're really in sync with recruiting the kind of kid that belongs here, that's going to benefit from being here, and it's going to kind of really kind of embrace this and get the most out of it as well. So if they do that and they do that in all facets of their life here, that's going to make them a better lacrosse player too.
One of the things that I have been privy to about the way that you and your staff has spoken to high school athletes over the course of a long period of time, probably, you know, dating back to the beginning of your career and certainly predating my time at Inside Lacrosse, is, you know, there's this notion that some coaches talk about playing time, talk about the opportunity to win, whatever the case may be. And as I understand it, you are very resistant to that. Instead, choosing to emphasize the things that, as a coach, are more within your control, right? Not to say that you don't necessarily control playing time, but at the same time, player performance controls playing time. How do you regard that message? How do you approach a conversation where, you know, a high school junior might want to know where he projects in your program?
Well, you know, there's kind of a lot of different pieces to that, Terry, but it starts with this. It's disrespectful for me to talk to a young man about playing time when I've got guys on my team who've been here for 1, 2, 3 years working their tail off for that same playing time. So I'm not going to give that playing time to somebody who's never set foot on our field. And I'm not going to promise that to anybody. I'm not going to even, you know, but balance that with the idea that, hey, if I didn't think you were going to be a player at the level that we want to play at a championship level, and if I didn't think you were going to be a player at that level, we wouldn't be sitting here having the conversation in the first place. So somehow we got to marry those two things. You know, you're never going to get promised anything here. You're going to have to earn what you get. And just like the other 50 guys out there, And you're going to have to work for that, and we're going to have to see that on our field before you get any any piece of that. But at the same time, you've got the ability. And we're going to provide you all the resources for you to maximize your ability. Whether it's in the weight room or whether it's film and development on the field and that kind of thing. We think we can do that as well as anybody. And so if you have that belief in yourself that, you know, and you trust that we know what we're doing in terms of recruiting guys who are going to be able to play at this level, then it's a matter of how much work are you going to put in and where you fit in. Terry, just to backfill on that a little bit, you know, one of the things last year, you know, that was kind of very heartening about our team, we talk consistently with our guys who aren't playing that – your job's not to beat out the guy in front of you. Your job is to play at a level high enough that we have to find a place for you, right? Like, you just concentrate on that. And then you don't have to worry. You don't have to wish ill on a teammate. Like, I hope that guy misses that shot because I want to play in front of him. You know, hey, if I make that shot, if I make my shots and I make plays, then they're going to find a place for me. And one of the things last year, you know, the depth that we were able to have and develop confidence in was just because those guys did that in practice day after day. And we didn't go into the year saying, hey, we're going to have three midfields. We're going to play five defensive, you know, short stick D middies. You know, we went into the year, you know, honestly thinking, I hope we can find two good midfields. And we know we got a couple good D middies. I hope we can find a couple more. But by the end of the year, guys had put themselves in that position, and that was terrific. You know, they didn't sit around worrying about who was playing in front of them. So that was kind of the best manifestation of that idea that I could have asked for.
And you could see it growing incrementally as the year went on, too, right? It wasn't, you know, maybe against Georgetown, that third midfield got on the field, you know, once a half or so. And then by, you know, mid-April, they were on the field twice a quarter. And your point is well taken with respect to the D-middies and even, you know, a fourth attackman as well.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, but kind of separating that out, to balance what you might quote unquote lose from a leverage or power standpoint in a conversation when you're trying to sell against a lot of other very appealing opportunities to play college lacrosse, that might include like, yeah, you know, we see you coming in here and being, you know, a contributor as a freshman and a starter as a sophomore. The way I understand it, informed by having been around the program for a while, I remember sitting in a hotel ballroom in Durham the night before a Duke game, and you and I had this very conversation about how what you tried to provide and to an extent guarantee because it was within your control were these really special experiences that you might not be able to get elsewhere. And you know, a lot of teams go to Europe, but I do think that is like a relatively you know, kind of special emblem of the point. You guys went to, it was Germany, right, after the national championship game? Yeah. Last year. But that wasn't something that was planned like in the week after winning. That was we are going to Germany as a team because this is going to be an awesome experience. And it just so happened that it was one of the more epic championship celebrations that's ever occurred. But but can you speak to how you've tried to, you know, create these opportunities for experiences and development that fall outside of maybe the, you know, minimum viable that you might have needed to offer?
Our sell, anyway, you know, when you're talking about how having these, when a guy comes to visit Notre Dame, first of all, I try to spend as enough time with them that they become comfortable with what they need to know about our program, about the university, about those kinds of things and everything, but no more, because they're not going to hang out with me when they come to school here. They'll see me and they'll hear from me almost every day, but they're going to spend 20, you know, or plus hours a day with their friends and teammates and classmates. And that's where I want them to spend their time when they come here. When we talk, we don't talk almost at all about lacrosse. I don't know that I've ever watched film with a kid on his visit. Because the lacrosse part of it is not what you're choosing at that point, you know, and I don't think it's the most important thing that you're choosing. What you're choosing is, what is the experience that I'm gonna that I can have, and lacrosse? I'm gonna use lacrosse to get to this point, but lacrosse is gonna be a huge part of the experience, because I'm not kidding myself. I mean, we want guys who want to win championships. Those are the guys that it may be their number one priority, and that's fine. I don't think a guy has to have academics as his number one priority to do great at academics. You know, Eric Dobson was a 3.8 student. But I would wager to say he probably cared as much or more about lacrosse, you know, in his career. But that didn't mean he didn't care about other things, you know. So we try to emphasize all the other things that we're doing, you know. One of the great things about our team last season, you know, we had the highest GPA of any male team on campus last season, and we received an award from the Boys and Girls Club of Northern Indiana. Our team was voted by their staff and people was voted the Volunteer of the Year by the Boys and Girls Club of Northern Indiana. Right, and that's just one of the groups that we work with. But that says to me that our guys are excelling in a lot of areas. You know, it's not just lacrosse. I mean, they played lacrosse at an extremely high level. It wouldn't have been lower if we had spent less time doing, or higher if we'd spent less time doing community service, or, you know what I mean? I mean, we feel like those are all important parts of the guys that we have. So, you know, when you come into our locker room, Terry, there's not a lacrosse picture on the wall. There's jerseys from the seven international trips that we've taken. There's artwork from one of our former players who's an artist, to just to emphasize that, hey, bring your talents here. Bring all your talents. Don't just, you know, you don't have to be one dimensional. In fact, we'd prefer that you weren't. You know, there's a flag from one of our former players. We have a number of guys who've left us and gone into the SEALs and special forces and so, you know, we've those are the kinds of things that we try to emphasize in our locker room. Those are the kind of things we try to talk about in our recruiting. We feel like if we're putting that stuff out there and we're doing our job in terms of evaluations, right, and then we're going to get back the guys that we know can play because we have did a good job evaluating them. We know they care about lacrosse because they got themselves to the top of the class. But we also know that they're going to be a great fit at Notre Dame. They're going to be a great fit in our locker room, and that they're going to be the kind of young men that we want to be around, you know, frankly.
Quick aside, you brought up the diverse talent set. Has the ability to play the bagpipes, we know that guys have learned how to play, some better than others, while being on the roster. Has it ever actually come up in a recruiting conversation?
Oh, yeah. There's a few different people that have said, oh, by the way, coach, I'm taking bagpipe lessons, all right? I know how to play the bagpipes. It is kind of funny, but mostly, you know, like I don't think anybody's really claimed that as a great talent since Sean Meehan was here.
Got it.
Although Brian, I will say Brian Tevlin came in, and Brian was very proud of having been a bagpiper for years, and he was very good. He was very talented.
No doubt. Before kind of moving off this element of the conversation, Notre Dame does have kind of notoriously stringent academic standards. Where does that fall into the evaluation process? Are there guys who, you know, basically by virtue of their grades or test scores just can't get in, can't qualify as potential recruits at Notre Dame?
No, without question, there are a lot of those people. We try our best not to recruit any of them, right? I mean, you know, we have a hard start date of September 1, and we try to do as much, you know, kind of background stuff as we're allowed to do without violating any of the rules to find out, because we don't want to waste anybody's time and, you know, and come go visit them, have them come visit here, and then find out admission says no. That doesn't make sense for any of us, right? So you know, that's one of the advantages maybe of being at a place for 36 years. You have a pretty good sense of what admissions is gonna do and how they're gonna view different guys and so we don't want guys, we're really not looking for guys who are going to scrape by here academically. That it's really hard to get the best out of somebody when they're underwater all the time academically, right? I mean, they're just, again, they're not going to have the experience you want them to have. They're not going to be at their best on the field if they're just, you know, battling for their lives every day on the academic side. And so we want them to work hard and they're going to have challenges and all that. But we want to make sure that we're recruiting guys that are capable of doing that work. And they value that work, right? That's important. I mean, just like we want guys who have a high motor on the field. We don't want to, you know, be talking to guys about going to class and stuff like that. We want them going to class because they want to learn and get good grades, because they have, you know, aspirations, you know, professionally that they look at this in the proper way. This is a great opportunity for them to build themselves, you know, a resume and a path forward.
So in the neighborhood of experience and you know, if there's one side which is doing the extra stuff, there's the other side of this is built into the Notre Dame experience. And I believe there are only 11 Power Four football teams that have men's lacrosse, and Notre Dame is one of them and one of the most historically significant. And I have spoken to coaches at similar programs that see it as a balance, where certainly we want, you know, our players, our students to have an opportunity to savor all that entails, but we understand that it, you know, it can pose a challenge or a distraction, for lack of a better word. How do you regard being at a big-time football school, being at a big-time athletic school, because it's not just football. I mean, you guys win and compete for national championships in a ton of other sports, and I'm sure you've got, you know, guys going to hockey games and basketball games and softball games and gymnastics meets and women's basketball games as well. So how do you balance just kind of being a part of an athletic community while also making sure that there's room for the service, the academic, and the lacrosse side?
Yeah, I don't look at it as a distraction. I look at it like everything else. You've got to prioritize. You know, I mean, that's one of the great lessons of college, right? Is learning how to balance competing priorities and figuring out, you know, what you have to do to be successful in different areas, and how much that leaves you for other things. So I look at it that way. Our guys, you know, I think our guys during the fall, you know, my observation would be they work really hard on Sunday through Thursday so that they can enjoy the football weekends, right? And why wouldn't you? And the last thing I would want to do is tell them not to enjoy those weekends. That's one of the great things about being at Notre Dame, right? But understand it comes with working really hard Sunday through Thursday, because if you don't do that, then you're not going to enjoy the weekend in 2 years. You're not going to be here.
So, you know, one of the elements that has, I don't want to say changed, because certainly there were times, you know, earlier on where there was a football lacrosse crossover presence, but it does feel like in the last couple of years that has been a little bit, you know, more strongly felt, you know, whether certainly this year it was with Jordan Faison and over the last couple of years, the presence of the football team on the sidelines of your games. What has the relationship between the two programs been like over the last couple of years?
Oh, it's been great the last couple of years. I mean, Marcus is terrific. He really, first of all, when we came to him with some of these guys, his reaction was, first, if I can help you, tell me how, right? Which was great. But, you know, he did not have to have that attitude at all. And we've had other coaches who didn't have that attitude at all. So that was great. You know, he's like, hey, if I can help you. And we were like, oh, I actually think this might be kind of a mutually beneficial situation here. I think this kid might be able to help you. So take a look at the film, you know, and here's the contacts for his coaches and things, kind of make it a layup for him to do a little research, and see if you think this kid, you know, is going to be able to help you. And so, you know, thankfully that's been a thing, you know, that he's looked at it. His coordinators and assistant coaches have said, yeah, this kid's, you know, he could help us. And I don't know that anybody saw Jordan, you know, going from walking on in the, you know, fall to being the MVP of the bowl game in that first year. But they made way for the possibility of it, right? And including assuming his scholarship, because they had to, because that's how things worked at that point. You had to be on a football scholarship to play.
So, kind of transitioning into how things have evolved over the course of your time. I mean, I think that the like hallmarks, so to speak, are so significant. And one of the things that I've always taken away from our conversations is my tendency to maybe overemphasize. And so I want to be moderate when it comes to the role that these things played. But if I can just throw down a couple of points in time and you can speak to what recruiting was like before and after, basically how the event changed what it was like, that would be appreciated. And I'd like to start with 2001 and the trip to the Final Four. What did that do for the program in terms of, you know, what it meant in terms of your ability to evaluate players and once conversation started?
I mean, I do think that made recruiting easier. It's hard to separate that from the fact that year was also the year that we've got first scholarship money to be able to recruit with.
And that was where I was going to go next. Yeah, so you can speak to them collectively.
Those kind of happened simultaneously. Now, the interesting part is that actually messed up our team for a couple years because there. I'll share, you know, the blame. Not share the blame. I'll assume the blame for this because I think it was largely I didn't handle that well. The university asked me not to go backwards with scholarship money, just give it to the incoming freshmen. And that was a mistake. And I didn't know enough at that time to tell them that was a mistake and to say, hey, if that's the way it's going to be, let's wait 2 years and then give me all the money. But I'm not going to start like this because that's going to break up the trust, the level of trust within the locker room, the level of trust between me and the players. Before there was, everybody was non-scholarship. So there's no reason to think anybody played for any reason other than, you know, you could say the old coach liked them more, but you had to say that guy earned it, you know, to be playing in front of me. And then all of a sudden there's scholarship guys. And it's like, oh, this freshman's playing in front of a junior. You know, he's just playing because he's a scholarship guy. And it's like, no, still playing for the same old reason. We think he's better, gives us a better chance to win. But that was a hard thing to go through, and we didn't handle it well. I didn't handle it well in terms of just putting a stop to it and saying, if you don't want to be here, don't be here. That got a little bit confusing. And so anyway, that, you know, that's the only time we ever didn't go to the tournament 2 years in a row, you know, during that period. And I think that was why, you know, it was just a breaking of the trust of what we were doing. Even though we were recruiting better players, you know, it wasn't accepted as readily on our team as it could have been or should have been. But we did, because of those two things, we were recruiting better players. Simple as that. You could get in on guys that you couldn't get in before, you know. Notre Dame also did a much better job with financial aid over the years, right? I mean, as our endowment has grown, that they've made that their number one priority in terms of what they're going to do with endowment funds. And they funded financial aid much better because before 2000, our financial aid was okay. We had no scholarship and our financial aid was okay, you know? And so it's like when all that kind of shifted the other direction, again, now you've got proof. You got proof of concept that you can play at the highest level. You've got, you know, the resources to back it up, and the kind of the commitment of the university was also coming in at that time, and we were flying to our games instead of busing and things of that nature. So, you know, a lot of that stuff all kind of happening as we went through the early 2000s.
So to transition to the late 2000s, and I think you're right, like there's probably too many dependent variables to separate them out. So you make the NCAA tournament in 2006 and 7, I believe. And then in 2008, the GWL creates its conference tournament for the first time and three teams get in, and that meaningfully changed a combination of things. And what's interesting is, you know, whether it's, I remember having this conversation with Utah or Cleveland State or you know, certainly a lot around kind of the Ivy League as well, basically the role of a conference tournament and specifically a conference automatic qualifier in terms of extending your season, giving your team an opportunity to have dreams of making it to the NCAA tournament, have the goal of making it to the NCAA tournament, and then use that as the new platform, the new foundation upon which to build. So that was one element of it, but that actually was very short-lived because it quickly gave way to the Big East for very similar reasons in terms of 2007 and Syracuse missing the NCAA tournament. And then concurrent with all that is you bring in Jerry Byrne as an assistant, and certainly, you know, he, I know, was instrumental in the way in which the recruiting approach continued to evolve as well. So do you mind speaking to effectively the end of the 2000s and kind of, you know, leading up to that 2010 NCAA championship game run with respect to how things evolved in kind of that window of time?
I mean, there was a lot going on, but again, I think from 2001 on, we I don't think we've been outside the top 20 since then. And I think that creates a new expectation and a new awareness for kids. You know, I mean, again, kids have, you know, we tend to over estimate how much kids know in terms of history, right? I mean, right now, the guys that we're going to start recruiting next week, 2 years ago, they were going into their freshman year. And 2 years before that, they probably weren't paying that much attention to what was going on in college lacrosse, right? And so, you know, what have you done for me lately is a very real thing. But from that time on and with the awareness of us, you know, getting into the top 20, staying in the top 20 and winning, tournament games, not just getting into the tournament, but winning tournament games on a consistent basis. You know, I think that that creates a whole nother, you know, kind of level of awareness and all that. It's hard to, in some ways, it's you're so myopically involved with, you know, what's going on today that you kind of forget what it was like to go through some of those steps back in the day. And remember, you know, trying to get on the very best guys, right? And almost looking at the board going, all right, we can't get that guy, we can't get that guy, so let's go after this guy and this guy over here. So, you know, and again, you know, back in those days, it was financially harder. You know, we hadn't competed consistently for championships, you know, like we have in the last decade. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that are just a little bit off, and but you can't slot yourself, you know, I mean, you're not going to accept that as a limitation. Because if you do, you're never going to get out of that. And so you've got to be constantly selling to kids that, hey, that's just the floor. That's not where we're stuck. That's just the floor.
At the risk of it being difficult to remember, but just kind of another one of those coincidences, joining the ACC, and I guess you had opened Arlotta Stadium a few years earlier than joining the ACC, which I believe was in 2015. But you know, what role did those two events play in terms of development of the program?
Again, it just kind of closes the loop on everything. I mean, we have the resources, we have the facilities, we have the support within the university. In every aspect, athletically and academically, we have the finances to do what we need to do. We've got now a history that says we're going to compete at this level, and now we're playing the best schedule in the country, you know, year after year after year. And I would, you know, argue with anybody that said we don't play a top five schedule every single year, because we purposely do that, right? We know we're going to play the ACC, but we don't stop there. We play Maryland, we play Georgetown, we play the best teams that we can play, because we want that challenge. You know, again, that's part of the experience of playing here. You're going to play a great schedule every single year. You know, and again, if you want to play at that highest level and you love the challenge of doing that, you don't want to just do that on weekends in May. You want to do that every week.
So in terms of two trends, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it, in recruiting in the sport, you said two of the more compelling things that were said to me on the topics when they were relevant. So with respect to poaching, you were very direct in saying, like, we are not going to recruit early and we are not going to concede the best players, which means that we are going to recruit committed players. And then, interestingly, when the rules changed that prevented contact from Division I coaches to prospective student athletes until September 1 of their junior year, you actually kind of pose, you've been one of the few folks who've posed, like, I'm not saying it's, you didn't characterize it as being worse, you just posed it as a negative insofar as when you were recruiting freshmen and sophomores, you actually found the parents to be a little bit more involved and that there were some benefits to that with respect to the prudence of the decision making relative to in the current setting where maybe the parents are a little less involved and maybe, you know, some of these high school juniors would benefit from being a little bit more broad in terms of their thinking. I don't necessarily have a question about each, but I'm interested in the thought kind of, you know, now 6 years, I guess, 7 years later on the poaching topic and, you know, coming up on 3-4 years later on the early recruiting topic.
Well, once the poaching, and I don't like that word, it's not poaching. It's just recruiting. It's just recruiting. You know, there's a date when things are over, right? And once the custom became to, you know, recruit in that manner, the toothpaste is out of the tube, right? So now it's okay. That's the reality of what we do. You recruit a kid until he puts his name on the dotted line. That's how it works, and everybody knows that. And so there's no surprises or anything else. There's disappointment in that, of course there is. But again, I got to be honest with you. To me, this is the ultimate, like, these are kids making these decisions, and they have every right to change their mind. They have every right to make what they think is the best decision for them and their family. And they have that right up until they sign it away. And I don't, you know, it's happened to us and we, you know, and it's happened for us. And I still feel the exact same way about it. It's, I get why people don't like it, but I also feel like it gives kids the opportunity to make their best choice for the school that they want to spend their time at.
No doubt. And what about the notion of having conversations with juniors and them being a little bit more independent from their parents relative to the prior year?
We try to include the parents right from the beginning. I think it's really important that it is a family decision. And I think I love that there are a lot of parents that say this is going to be his decision, but we're going to try to help guide him in you know, doing that. And you know, I think that's the exact appropriate way for the parents to be involved. You know, make sure you're asking the tough questions. Make sure that there's, you know, solid reasons and that their reasoning is consistent, you know, and what they're trying to do. And make sure that they are considering all the things that they don't know to consider at that age. But at the end of the day, they're the one who's going to have this experience. They're the one who's going to pick this school and have to live it out. So it is their decision. So I like where we are right now with that. But we do actively try to get the parents involved, unless they just say we're out. We don't, you know, this is his deal. And you have a few of those. But mostly I think parents are appropriately involved right now in a lot of the recruiting we do.
It actually raises an opportunity for a very funny question, which is, how involved were you in Will's recruitment?
So Will was funny because, you know, first of all, and I think every coach will tell you this, it is, oh, nobody wants to recruit their son. I think I'm the only one who recruited Dave Urich's son back in the day. I mean, Scott came out here, took a visit and everything else. And I was like, hey, if you don't go to Georgetown and play for your dad, we'd love to have you here. But you know what I mean? And he went to Georgetown. Just and that's why I think we were the only ones who recruited him, not because he wasn't good enough, but because everybody else was like, he's going to go play for his dad. So Will was not as good a player as Scott was at that age. He would have gotten more attention. But I, you know, Will consistently would ask me like, hey, am I a Division I player? And I'm like, as soon as one Division I coach tells you that you can play on his team, then you're a Division I player. But until then, no. Doesn't matter what I think. I'll make that decision for me, you know, at the end of this. But in the meantime, you know, you got to impress some other people. You got to get, you know, do that. And he took a look at a few schools. Mike Corrado was great to recruit him to Villanova. And I think that would have been a great school for him if Notre Dame hadn't worked out. But when he found out I would accept that I would let him on our team and that Notre Dame would accept him as a student, then I think that was it for him.
It was pretty much over at that point.
Yeah. The Germans had bombed Pearl Harbor.
Kind of bringing this into kind of starting to take the descent into the landing of the conversation and talking about a little bit about the status of things right now. So obviously you had a significant staff change. I guess it would have been the summer of 2019 into the spring of 2020, and Ryan Wellner and Chris Wojcik joined as assistants, and then more recently Ryder Garnsey has been a, you know, mainstay as the third assistant. And those guys spent a lot of time on the road, as do you, in the summertime. How do you describe the staff dynamic in terms of the responsibility when it comes to evaluation and creating consensus as to who you want to pursue, what your board looks like? And then how do you guys handle communication once September 1st arrives?
You know, Ryan is our leader. He does a great job. But we don't overthink it. We don't over-organize the summer. We're like, you know, short of saying, let's make sure we cover every event that we know we should cover. We're like, you know, all right, now let's parcel it out. Who's going to be where, who's going to do what and do all that. And we start some lists and stuff like that, but we don't really get too into it. You know, we, you know, you're constantly chatting about different guys that you saw or liked or whatever. But it's really not too formal until we get back here in August and we sit down and we start to go over our lists. And that's when we really put everybody down and say, okay, you know, where did you see him? How much did you see him? How much did you like him? where do you have him in, at his position and everything else. And that's when we have the, we sit and watch film of all of them and we talk about them, you know, talk about our current roster and where our needs are, you know, talk about the class in front of them and any gaps that we might have had that we need to fill or anything, or the two classes in front of them. In that way, but yeah, that largely happens in August. And again, Ryan is great at, you know, talking to, club coaches and high school coaches and finding out the kids who have an interest in us, you know what I mean? And that kind of thing. And we can't, you can't really reciprocate, you know, you can't really say, oh, he's our top guy. He's our, you know, but you can find out, hey, you know, this kid likes you. And you're like, all right, yeah, that's good to know. So you try to gather all that information if you can, and you try to figure out, you know, where a kid is academically and everything else, you know, but it's hard because it's a dance around the rules, you know, in a lot of ways, right? You'd love to be right now setting up visits and doing all kinds of things like that, but you can't do that till September 1. You can't get in those conversations, you know? So it takes somebody that's really willing to kind of work behind the scenes to put you in a place where September 1 can be what you want it to be, you know, where you're focused on the right guys, you're making contact with the right people, you're setting yourself up for the next few weeks of visits and all that kind of thing.
You brought something up that I wanted to circle back on, which is evaluating via video, because I think it's very different from evaluating in person. I think that they each have their merits and they each have their detriments. How do you describe the value of evaluating a player by video relative to in person?
Well, I mean, you know, in a short time with video, you can see a lot of the plays that a guy's capable of making, right? I mean, you might have to watch a guy for a month to see everything you can see in a well-made, you know, 6-minute video, right? And so, you know, that's the best thing. You can, if it's a well-made video, and by the way, we've been telling Ryder all week, we need him to go into business in helping kids know what a good video is. You know, everything from the music selection to the variety of plays that they make and the things that you don't want to have on there and everything else. So look for that. He may be coming out with a new business here soon.
As long as he's advertising on Inside Lacrosse, then I'm all good with it. There's nobody with more credibility on doing it. He has like the best high school highlight video of all time.
Well, yeah, that's right. And you know, it keeps popping up. I don't know why it keeps popping up when we're watching videos. It keeps coming back to Ryder Garnsey highlights. I don't know. It must be something about his computer.
For sure.
But no, there's great. The video is great. I mean, you can, because it's, again, these are guys we've already said, let's look at these, you know, 12 attackmen that we saw this summer, and let's, you know, we rank them and then we watch them and say, oh, you know, let's move him, and you know, and let's, you know, because you see, oh wow, I didn't realize he was capable of making some plays like that, or wow, you know, I see he, you know, I didn't get to see him against a team as good as the one he's making plays against right here, you know, and he's really doing well, and that can change things, right? And so, you know, the video's a terrific part of the thing, and thankfully, you know, guys are doing a pretty good job of kind of filling that in. As you get to August, all of a sudden you see, you know, every day videos popping up on these guys that they've put together the 2024 summer, you know.
So at the risk of doing two things that we've already established are either not useful or not possible, so hopefully this isn't a function of memory because it occurred last summer. The question is, how similar or different was recruiting the class of 24 relative to recruiting the class of 25 on the basis of the binary distinction between recruiting on the back of a national championship? Did that change conversations last summer?
I don't think it did, honestly. I mean, I think we've been in that conversation for a long time. You know, I think certainly it keeps us in that conversation with top kids, but again, you know, we're competing at that level. We're in the best conference in the country. We play a great schedule. There wasn't much else for a kid to look at and go, you know, and again, I guess I'm naive and thinking that didn't have more of an impact. It certainly didn't hurt, and we got a great class, but I think kids are choosing Notre Dame. and then they're choosing Notre Dame lacrosse and the you know, the chance to win championships. And so I think that's we're certainly in as good a place as we've ever been on both of those fronts. But you know, again, I look at it and say if you lost a championship in overtime, right? Then that's as close to a national championship as you can be. I mean, clearly you can win a championship if you got to overtime of the championship game. So we felt like for the last decade or more, we've been playing at that level, competing at that level. You know, we won, you know, multiple tournament games in a lot of years. Those things were all in place. So I don't know. It certainly doesn't hurt to go in there with the blush of a championship. That's for sure.
Well, I think that's a good note to end on. Kevin Corrigan, we really appreciate your time. Best of luck as you incorporate a new group. A lot of freshmen coming back, a lot of now seniors that, you know, have to figure out a new leadership role dynamic for themselves. And certainly you guys got to hit the road as well as host some visits over the course of the next month. So busy time, but I hope you have an opportunity to enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. I really appreciate you having me on and a chance to talk about some of this stuff with you.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.